Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
Tonight we're going to talk about the 1989 film Dead Calm, directed by Philip Noyce, who also directed Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, The Saint, 1997, and Salt. Brother Jay, this is on your list?
It is.
Take it away. Introduce us to Dead Calm.
Dead Calm was a movie that I saw clearly some time ago. And I think I caught it like the back end of it on TV once, and it scared the crap out of me. I was like, oh, I have to go watch the whole thing now. Even though I'm usually pretty bad about stuff that scares me. So, and then I think I rented it. I want to say it was still on VHS at that point. I remember watching it and like it freaked me out sufficiently. And then also turned me off of Billy Zane forever.
Oh, Billy Zane is great. So what did you think about it this time?
There were lots of problems with this movie. The first eighth of the movie was completely and totally unnecessary.
Yeah, no shit.
Drew, you had a problem with the first part of the movie?
I had a problem with the first part of the movie, and I had a problem with the last bit of the movie, and I thought there was a ton of awesome stuff in the middle. Stand by.
Okay. So, Drew, when did you see this movie first?
I first saw this probably in the really early 90s. I think it was one that kind of came on and off the movie channels.
I think you're right.
I don't know that I ever saw it front to back. And I hated the beginning and I hated the end. But I thought the middle part was really good.
We'll get into it, but I thought the beginning was unnecessarily graphic, and the end was retarded. I mean, the end was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Come on, that's the best use of a flare ever.
It ruined what I thought was kind of the point of the movie.
Did you know that Orson Welles tried to make this movie?
No.
In the late 60s, he, I think it had Jean Moreau and Lawrence Harvey and some other people that were in it. And he didn't get it completely filmed. And then I think Lawrence Harvey died. And of course, it was based on a novel. And I think the novel and maybe the Wells script had more characters. And maybe the Billy Zane character wasn't as sexual. But still, it was interesting that Philip Noyce was actually gifted a copy of the book by producer Tony Bill, who had tried to get the rights from the Wells estate and wasn't able to, but Philip Noyce was able to get them.
This says Orson Welles had filmed it under the name of The Deep.
Yeah, but it was never completed, or if it was completed, it was never went through post-production, so there is no copy that you could watch, I don't think. Anyway, so that was just an interesting Orson Welles connection, but other than that, it's a pretty simple movie.
It's a tiny movie.
Yeah.
It could be a stage play easily.
Oh, yeah. And it took a long time to shoot because they were actually out in Australia shooting it. Shall we dive into the plot?
Sure.
So we have a troubled couple. By the way, this plot summary by IMDb, it's not quite the best, but I edited it somewhat for clarity and for time, and I'm going to yada yada some of the stuff.
Oh man, I was So there's a part, like, I don't know, a quarter of this movie is just Sam Neill by himself in a sinking ship, right?
Yes.
And I didn't really follow everything that was going on with him. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention. So I went and I read after the movie, after I watched it, I went and read the synopsis on IMDb to see if it would shed some light on that part of the movie. Whoever wrote that synopsis is a weirdo pervert. That was a very troubling and unsettling synopsis based on the movie I had just watched.
Yeah, it goes into like a beat by beat or blow by blow, if you pardon the pun, description of the sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of glosses over and adds stuff to the other scenes that I didn't quite get. Because, yeah, we need to talk about some stuff in the movie. But it's we meet Australian Naval Officer John Ingram, played by Sam Neill, who we know from The Hunt for Red October. You know, it's always disturbing to see a bunch of sailors on a train. So he pulls into the train station to get picked up by his wife and child. And his wife is Ray, played by Nicole Kidman, who turned 20 during the filming of this movie.
Wow.
And we know her from Days of Thunder, Malice, and Eyes Wide Shut.
And Sam Neill was in his early 40s.
Easily.
Mm-hmm.
In the plot synopsis, it says that John and Ray take a break on their yacht in the Pacific after a tragic automobile accident in which their small son was killed while Ray was driving. Well, you could have summed that up in about a minute and a half if you did it well enough and could still convey the disaster of it. But it kind of lingered.
And it was unnecessary.
Yeah, it was totally unnecessary.
Especially when they have the mannequin going through the windshield. That was unnecessary.
Sam Neill was also in the ABC TV miniseries America. I remember him in that.
No, Sam Neill's been in a lot. But
he has a huge Nicole Kidman.
Because she started young.
Mm-hmm.
She looks very, very different.
Yes, she does. Yeah, turns out, I don't think, and again, this is, I'm not the hero of this story, but I didn't quite get the attraction to her because I don't like her hair in this movie. It's very shallow, but it's completely true. Horrible hair.
It's very late 80s.
Yeah, but not, I don't know. Anyway, so Ray's very upset by this loss, of course, as you would think John would be too. But anyway, they're out in the Pacific to try to swim their troubles away or whatever.
John doesn't get upset about anything.
No.
Never.
No. And they're out in the middle of the Pacific. Like, there's no one out there except themselves and then soon to be another ship here. Yeah, there's no help coming for them. There's no cavalry. They're in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, they're doing their thing. And they see this boat in the distance, a yacht in the distance. And as they're getting closer to it, they see this dinghy being paddled furiously toward them. And who is paddling the dinghy but Billy Zane, who plays Huey Warner. We know Billy Zane from Back to the Future and Tombstone.
And Twin Peaks fans will also remember him.
Oh, yeah. No, he's been in a ton of stuff, too. Hey, this isn't his first sinking ship movie, either. He was a prominent member of the Titanic.
Well, this was probably his first sinking ship movie.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Okay, fine.
Before
not his only one, is what I meant.
There you go.
Last week's episode was nothing but getting names wrong and stumbling over words. It was slightly embarrassing, but and this week I think I'm even more tired than I was last week, so I'm going to try to suck it up and do this right. So Billy Zane shows up looking scared.
And, Wiggined. That doesn't work on an audio podcast. I just gave him a
gesture of what he can do with his Wiggined. So, so Huey shows up looking scared, and he has his tale about how he was lost at sea. All of his fellow crew members or whatever of this yacht succumbing to botulism, which must be a super common thing because they bite on it right away.
Salmon.
Yes. I thought it was for cats. So he's freaked out. But of course, John wants to go check out the other ship to at least salvage some stuff off it. He's a sailor. Huey doesn't want any part of that. So They give Huey some tea and have him sleep, and then lock him in his cabin with the flimsy lock that we saw. That maybe it's just a normal boat thing, because that was the same sort of lock they used in the Dunkirk, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Cape Fear.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. So John takes the dinghy over to the Black Schooner and climbs aboard.
Wasn't it the Orpheus?
Yes, I'm sorry, that's the name of the boat, yeah. Here's where the synopsis already gave me a question. Upon his arrival on the ship, John discovers that Huey's original story was untrue. He finds several bodies but realizes that the dead are murdered. A tape of a film reveals that Huey was the cameraman on a low-budget production, during which he snapped and murdered the director and four women involved. Now knowing the truth, John tries to rush back to his yacht to warn Ray. Was any of that clear to you?
No. I mean, it was clear that they didn't die of botulism.
Sure. Yeah, and he found the bodies, and it was gross. And so, obviously, Huey had stuff to hide. But I didn't even get what happened to them, necessarily, from that video, that they played all through, little bits of it through the movie.
Yeah, it's just that Huey was getting more and more unhinged, and the people in the video were getting more and more uncomfortable with him.
Yes. Drew's co-host is making quite an appearance this week.
He's very upset that I put his toy away.
He's protesting his less amount of pay than the other host.
I think so. Got to get him a business.
We all get paid the same.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the Ingram yacht, now Ray doesn't follow directions. We find out because John, the last thing he tells her is, "Hey, get the gun and load it. Keep it with you till I get back." And she's like, "Pshaw, I'm going to sit in the boat and throw a tennis ball in the water and let my dog fetch it." By the way, it's unclear how the dog got back on the boat. Did she have to, like, lift him up, like, lean way over and lift him up all the time?
Probably.
It seems like you would have to. Because that's what Billy Zane has to later. But, oh well. And it's not a big dog, so.
Big enough to be harpooned.
Well, Billy Zane wakes up and knows that something's wrong, so he realizes he's being locked in, and he manages to escape through the hatch in the ceiling of the room underneath, I don't know, onto the main deck, whatever. So he wakes up, he struggles with Ray before knocking her out, all the while John is headed by dinghy back to the boat, saying, "Get off, Ray, jump off, get out!" Like, it's basically telling her just to abandon ship. Because the guy's a crazy person. But no, Huey's not having any of that. So he knocks Ray out and turns on the motor and motors away from John, who is now stuck on a dinghy. So John has to go back to the sinking ship. At first, he didn't think it was sinking so bad, but turns out it was sinking.
Sinking.
Hello? This is the German Coast Guard.
We are sinking. We're sinking.
What are you thinking about?
Well, he does a pretty valiant effort at bilging water out of it, which seems like that would have been like a superhuman effort.
Yeah, he pumps all this water out manually, gets the motor started briefly, and he's going to rescue his wife. Mm-hmm. So that's all well and good. So, but back to the other boat, Ray wakes up and finds that Huey is just playing with the dog and hanging out, and he's dancing to a Rolling Stones song or something. The music in this movie is not great. The sound of this movie is fantastic.
That song had a particularly strange title.
Well, the fact that they lingered on the words isopropyl alcohol.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Like, that's weird. Also, the copy with the subtitles on, it actually had the dog saying arf. I hate bad subtitles. Fuck them.
But what? That's an awesome subtitle.
No, it's not. You don't need that. I mean, I guess maybe in parentheses you can put barking, but arf?
That's cute.
I suppose.
Well, you know, what kind of bark was it? It was an arf.
It was more of a yip. Maybe that's racially insensitive. So now we have this game where Ray is trying to find ways to stop the boat so that John can catch up. And it says in the plot synopsis that she communicates with John by Morse code. That is just wrong. She manages to turn on both the radar and radio and can hear some static. And then John realizes that she can't hear him, but she must hear the static because she keeps talking. So he does the one for yes, two for no, which I do not believe is Morse code. I think that's
just I'm movie pretty sure code. That's Morse code. That's the entirety of Morse code.
Blah, blah, blah. He's going to catch up. So she figures out a way. So she decides to stop the boat. And so she turns off the engine and decides to, after a brief little chase, throws the key off the boat. Which seems like a good idea, but the keychain is a flotation keychain.
Because they're on a boat.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the dog goes out to try to fetch it.
This is one of the points in the movie where I'm yelling at the television set. At the point that Huey was trying to convince the dog to come back to him, why wouldn't she have gone behind and around and gotten the gun while he was preoccupied with getting the key?
A gun, a knife, a anything. Club, a
yeah.
stick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, it's like lots of poor choices.
Yeah, she's they're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to have her be a damsel as well as trying to have her be a fierce survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind it because she kind of, there is a bit of an arc to it. She starts out being very passive and not really knowing what to do. And then she tries a couple things. And then by the end, she's a pretty fierce survivor.
I suppose.
And I did see it as a progression. I mean, yeah, she didn't make great choices in the beginning, but she figured shit out eventually. That's one of the things I did appreciate about this movie.
So she has to, I mean, she realizes that Huey is insane, and she ends up, after he gets the keys back, she runs down and hides in the bathroom, and he's kicking on the door, a la Jack Torrance. Then apparently he just goes and calms down and they all make nice. They're friends.
Well, he stops kicking and just knocks.
Yeah.
It's a classic sea hostage de-escalation technique.
Yeah, well, followed by the classic sea hostage
rapey scene.
Diversion plan where he kind of puts the moves on her and she's like, okay, I'll get him where I want him. This is going to suck. But we can make this work this to our advantage.
Yes, she pretty much acquiesces to being sexually assaulted.
Yes.
In a strategic manner. The way the synopsis is written does not portray this encounter the way I saw it.
Yeah, no. He puts some moves on her, so she acts like she's willing, but has to go pee first. So she runs up on deck and tries to get the gun, but getting the gun all put together is a process, and the dog barks and gives her away, so she has to come down the stairs and have to explain that she was going to get cigarettes for later, to explain why she was up on deck instead of peeing. And then as they begin to get hot and heavy, or as he begins to get hot and heavy on her, of course the dog also interrupts that. This dog was sort of a nuisance in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that dog sucked.
She said, well, I'll go put the dog away. And he's like, no, 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 no. Go away, dog. Also, the dog is entirely too friendly with this new crazy person on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except the dog runs hot and cold.
I suppose. I wonder if John is mean to the dog.
I don't think John shows any emotion towards the dog at all, ever.
I guess not. I don't know. They end up having sex, or he ends up raping her. But then we go back to the sinking ship, where John is having some issues. Because he's below deck, still trying to pump it out. And while they're pumping it out of his boat, he's pumping out the other boat. Anyway. Well, they're stuck, caught in a squall. And I don't know about you, but did it seem like they were, even though they're supposed to be, you know, what, a couple miles apart, maybe? They seemed like they were having dramatically different weather.
Yes, yeah. He was at the front end of the storm.
John is having trouble. It's getting, the water's rising below deck. He can't, he's rising faster than he can pump it out. He has already lost his engine, and so his electricity. And now his mast gets struck by lightning and falls down and lands in front of the bulkhead door, the only one he can use to get out. So, seems like things are pretty dire for John.
So this ship has been malevolent since the first moment he set foot on it, right?
Yes.
Like, as soon as he walked on deck, that big tackle swung loose and almost caved in his head.
Well, it's named after Lawrence Fishburne.
No, that's Morpheus.
Oh, I get names wrong.
It's close.
Yeah. So back on
Lane.
So back on the boat with Ray and Huey, they have the post-coital lemonade squeezins, where she tries to slip him a maritime Mickey.
She does.
She does, yeah, successfully. So she goes up on deck while he's getting dressed, and he's all happy. So she loads the gun and hides it when she hears him coming. And he's getting all suspicious and weird, but she's like, hey, there's a storm coming. Maybe we should batten down the hatches, or whatever the phrases are. But he finds her with the gun, and then the fight begins. And actually, the fight between them is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's sufficiently, like, realistically violent. But
yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, and luckily, by the time he gets the gun, he is now under the effects of the Mickey. And she manages to lock herself in the bedroom she manages to locate a spear gun. And she locks herself in the bedroom, and as he's pounding on the door, and she's shooting the spear gun through the door. Or maybe she's up on deck and he's down below. I don't know. There's a door involved. They're separated by a door.
Mm-hmm. Well, except she kills the dog.
Yeah, she accidentally kills the dog, so it's very sad. But you could see that coming. Because she shoots into the door, nothing happens, she shoots in the door again and sees blood coming from it.
Well, she hears the arf.
A much sadder arf is
that? Yes.
Arf. Like, arf.
So he almost gets her, but because the drink is in him, he manages to pass out. And she has an opportunity here to just kill him.
She's gonna
pooned him, right him in the head.
Throw him overboard.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Nay, shark bait.
Again, this is the first time she's ever been in this situation, and she makes some mistakes that she learns from.
But she had the presence of mind to tie him up. Like, just throw him overboard.
Well, you know, I have a story later that I'll tell you about that. Some things are easier to do than others.
Tell you what, though, this makes the case for always having industrial zip ties around.
It does. Or even a pair of furry handcuffs, whatever. So she ties him up, and she is turning the boat around to try to find John. And another fight ensues when he wakes up and cuts himself loose, and she ends up knocking him out with the spear gun and throws him on the rescue raft.
And cuts him loose.
Yeah, because you can't just throw him overboard. You got to throw him
on the raft. Why not?
Well, because there's another 30 minutes of movie left. So, throws him on the raft.
She's not a killer.
Exactly.
Except of her child.
I was going to say.
Well, she didn't know. It was the child's fault, by the way.
Oh, blame the victim.
Kid had not messed with his seatbelt.
Those poor car seat construction.
Those inferior Australian car seats.
A toddler that old should not be able to get out of his 5-point harness.
So, John, by the way, by this point, John has got things are really dire for John. So such that the water is going almost up to the ceiling and he's going to drown. But he finds a pipe that he manages to stick up through the hole, and so he can get some air. And the only thing that saves him is that he notices a fish swimming around next to him. And he's like, where there's fish, there's a hole.
That's right.
Yeah. So he dives down and manages to bash himself through a hole in the bottom of the boat and swims up and avoids drowning, which is pretty awesome.
Which is pretty amazing considering if the hole were that brittle, the slapping of the waves and the force of the water would have broken it by then.
Well, I mean, it was. There was a hole.
Now, of course, he's made a bigger hole, and it's the boat is already gonna sink. So he doesn't have a lot of time. So he sort of fashions himself a raft. And as his last-ditch effort to try to signal for help, he sets the boat on fire and goes out on the raft. And luckily, Ray sees the fire in time and goes toward it and manages to rescue him with a sweeping hand grab.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot of upper body strength.
Well, she's been working out.
Yeah, well, especially recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she's full of adrenaline juice and whatnot. So
adrenaline juice. Adrenaline juice.
So then, presumably the next day, the couple is happy again and Ray's out swimming in the water, and they discover the floating raft with no body in it.
Well, they didn't discover; they went to look at it.
Well, yeah, and they found the raft, but it had been overturned, and so presumably no body in it. But just to make sure, they shoot a flare or two in there to just sink that raft. But dun dun dun. There's a bloody handprint on the side of the boat. So you know this is not the last act. Which, by the way, this ending was tacked on by the movie studio 7 months after production ended because they didn't like the original ending, as you maybe you could tell.
It felt like it, yeah. Was that the original ending, just the handprint?
Yeah, I think so, yep. And it was sort of...
That would have been a great ending.
Or maybe that they never actually did find the raft, so it left it kind of ambiguous whether he survived or not.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. I would have been happy with that.
Yeah, and so the point is that she doesn't have to tell John what she did, what she went through to survive, but she's conquered it, and they survived, and they're all happy together.
Until she has a Billy Zane baby that pops out of her.
But now she's getting her hair washed. And Billy Zane shows up, and it's all very stupid. John is below deck, bringing up a plate of some sort of breakfast. She is laying back in a chair. She has to see her through one of the sails, so it's just silhouettes on canvas. Yet he manages to grab a flare, and we're talking about a flare gun. We're talking about like a piece of cardboard. That he has to pull a string or something to ignite the flare. And he manages to shoot the flare and hit the bad guy such that it lodges in the bad guy's mouth and then blows up his head in the most ridiculous death scene.
Oh, it was awesome.
I mean, I imagine in the theater you'd be like, yeah, except that it's ridiculous.
No, I still love it. It was the best thing ever.
And then
so satisfying.
She gives him the steely gaze.
It was not satisfying. It was not. Ray was the hero of the movie. She survived. She defeated Huey. She rescued John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they damseled her at the very end. Completely in such a cartoonish way.
I agree. Cartoonish. Now, fun and goofy, sure, but totally goofy. So yeah, so if you're expecting to have a dramatic ending, if you expected this movie to be a thinker, the ending completely unraveled that plan.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the original ending was with Ray bashing Huey's head with the spear gun and throwing him into the ocean on an inflatable mattress to float into the distance before she turns around and saves John. And the last shot of the movie was Ray hugging John and telling him that she loved him. And that she hadn't given up hope, giving her character closure from the hopeless outlook at the film's beginning. See?
Yeah, that might have redeemed the beginning a little bit, too. Because the beginning is never addressed again. Audiences didn't like it. Those audiences are dumb.
The ambiguous ending. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Those audiences get an F.
So this movie actually didn't make a shit ton of money. I mean, it probably made a lot of money on video and cable TV. I think it made its budget back from Australian and American releases, but it didn't make a whole bunch of money.
I'd never heard of it in the theater, and that was at a time when I went to see a lot of movies in the theater.
And I think it was primarily an Australian release. Anyway, anything else on Dead Calm?
I thought it was beautiful. Like, the really wide shots, I thought they looked great.
Oh, yeah. Sweeping shots of the boat.
Yeah. The night shots were great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I assume this is before digital, so that was all done on film. That must have been a lot trickier to do. And I did. I really enjoyed the arc of Nicole Kidman's character. You know, at the end when she was sailing towards John and the engine ran out of fuel, so she actually had to sail it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. I didn't really follow the, you know, everything John was doing. It was like peril, more peril, more peril, without really understanding what was going on. And they had the weird movie playing in the background. But I liked the fact that she was the one that had to rescue John, because the movie was not set up that way. It was set up that he would come rescue her. And that's not what happened. And I really appreciated that until they completely fucked us over by that stupid ending.
Well, while I'm thinking about it, there's one other thing that I think undermined the tension a little bit. When she is, she's sailing, right? She's sailing this boat. Takes some skill. And they show her, you know, she's at the wheel, helm or whatever it is. And then
she's going to the heading of, you know, the last known heading.
Yeah.
From when she saw the ship, the Orpheus, on the radar.
And then you see her on the very front of the boat, like perched over, presumably looking with
Titanic style.
And then they show her way up on top of the mast, I guess, presuming, like in the crow's nest, I guess, presumably to get a better view. But I thought, oh, that's just one state too far. I expected the next scene to be her water skiing behind the boat, you know, because it was just like, okay, come on.
Well, in the beginning of this movie, I wrote down, I can't tell if she's either really, really overacting or she's just performing awfully. Because at first it was her acting was just not good.
Well, she only had one expression to act off of with Sam Neill.
Yeah. Yeah.
John's pretty coercive, too. He's like, well, we'll just sail around by ourselves until we make another baby.
Was that stated or was that?
I don't remember that, but he was super creepy. He did not treat her like a peer. He treated her like he was a parent.
Yes. Yes.
And it was like all the way, even at the end when he's like washing her hair and stuff, it was weird. Like he was very paternal with her, not husbandly.
No.
And it didn't help that he was twice her age.
Well, also, you know, so in the very beginning of the movie, you know, this whole tragedy strikes. And so she actually, whether it's stated or just, I think it was stated that she just wanted to die, right? So let's take the suicidal lady out in the middle of the ocean and just have her swim.
Like, pretty much holding her hostage, right? She's like, I want to go home. And he's like, we're not going home until you get stronger.
And
right.
how much easier would it be to commit suicide than just stop kicking?
Yep.
So, I mean, again, I don't know. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it was very paternal toward her because she was 19.
Yeah. So I don't think that is a nuance I would have observed the first time I watched this movie. When I was, you know, 14 or so, but,
well, okay, hold on. How old was the boy? The boy was walking and talking. He must've been at least two, right?
Yeah. He looked like he was two or three.
Yeah. Which would have made her 16.
Well, I don't think Ray was that young, right?
Well, I guess not, but so Brother Jay, your verdict, Dead Calm.
I was glad to rewatch it because I hadn't watched it in a long time. Boyfriend Jesse watched it with me. He'd never seen it.
What did he think?
He thought it was He thought it was pretty good. He had some really, like, that's stupid. Why is she doing that? So he was really frustrated with parts of it. But I thought he thought it was pretty good for the most part. I would say this is probably a C movie at best, considering. But Drew's right that it's beautiful. It's just a beautiful movie.
And on film, too. I mean, we've seen a lot of beautifully shot digital movies. But this is like on the real ocean with real film. So, yeah. Hats off.
Yeah. Especially the nighttime shots were great.
So, Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, probably. I think it's worth it, especially if you don't have really high expectations. Because it's... I always think it's interesting to see, like, what sort of renowned artists do earlier in their career. You know, this is such a small contained movie compared to something like Salt, which I enjoyed quite a bit. Maybe not a great movie, but fun. And I enjoyed most of this movie. As I said before, I did not enjoy the beginning and I did not enjoy the end. And the ending really does feel tacked on and from a completely different movie. And I think the beauty of the visuals in this movie prevent the ending from completely ruining it. But it makes it real tough because that's the last taste that's left in your mouth.
Flair.
His mouth too, yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's worth it if you're a completionist. But if you're not, you can probably skip it.
Well, if somebody hadn't seen this movie, do you think it's worth recommending?
Only if you're a huge Nicole Kidman or Billy Zane fan.
Well, by the way, so they tacked on the ending with the flare in the mouth. But what they cut, what they left on the cutting room floor was the scene where Sam has to fight a shark. Or sorry, John has to fight a shark. So that must have been ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Also, you're right. It would have taken away. I mean, I didn't even look at it through the lens that, yeah, Rey's the hero, even though it's all set up that she wouldn't be. She's the action hero. And like I said before, I think this is a perfectly fine popcorn movie with a ridiculous ending and a really, really jarring beginning. It's the Up of the movies we've seen so far.
She figures out she's the smarter. Because she figures out on the radio what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, that I don't know that I'd have been that.
Well,
that.
Maybe her plans weren't very successful at first, but at least she was planning the entire time, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, plenty of good popcorn movie. But I think it rises above just standard trash that you can just throw away from the 80s. Because, yeah, it's very beautiful. But also the sound, the whole sound architecture of this movie. Like the sound of him gasping underwater is as part of the percussion in the score is amazing. So it's I love it. I'll put some of the sound in there because it's just amazing to me.
Orpheus in particular had it's like completely own and separate and really menacing soundscape.
Yeah, like a theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely different than I don't even know what the name of their yacht was, but
hold on. God knows it said it in there. As he caressed her in the blobbity blue.
Started with an S, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's like Scrotum or something. Something like that.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was the SS Scrotum.
Meanwhile, back of the Scrotum.
The Saracen.
Yeah, there you go. Saracen, Scrotum, it's whatever. So, Yeah, so thank you. I think it was worth it. It was like a popcorn movie. It's about time for a popcorn movie. We had a couple of heavy movies sort of lately. But housekeeping. Here's what I was alluding to before. So our youngest guinea pig, that remember I told you that the older guinea pig had a big old like tumor looking thing on her cheek, and we took it mm-hmm. to the vet and they drained it a little bit, but it kept coming back. And then finally one day we found that the pig had done its own surgery.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, that's incredible. Well, the younger guinea pig had the same thing. Big old like just abscess on the side of her mouth, face.
You need to switch foods.
No, I think it's just a guinea pig thing. But yeah, so we didn't take her to the vet soon enough. So it was pretty bad. And then she stopped eating and she was like, so Kelly comes and is like, she's like shaking and just like the pig, by the way. She's like shaking and not eating and she looks like it's time. So Kelly's like, we can't let her suffer. So, you know, so I took my guinea pig to the pet emergency clinic.
Oh, dear God.
Now, I thought to myself, I did. I was
really hoping the story wasn't ending with you like wringing its neck.
That was the thought, is like, okay, could I
harpoon?
I actually thought, well, I have a car and a plastic bag. Oh,
no.
I can gas the pig, right? I mean, it's going to move, I think. That would.
You're going to Kevorky in the.
But I don't. The thing is, I would have to lie to Kelly about it, which I don't like that idea. Just because I don't know. It would be such an absurd situation. I would want to tell the story at some point, and I don't want to, you know, be caught in a lie of this magnitude. Also, I don't want to be the guy my father thinks I am with regard to animals. So I thought about that too. It's like, you know, I don't want to just say, okay, get on a pair of heavy boots and just take care of this thing or throw it in the woods or something. So I honored the instructions to go and make sure that this pig didn't suffer. So the guinea pig that we rescued the pigs and they were $5 a piece, but this one was a replacement for the first one that died. And I think we paid like $23 for this pig. Hazard a guess how much it cost me to get the pig euthanized, the pet emergency?
$200.
I'm going to go $275.
You guys, okay, you're slightly over. It was $175. I could have saved $19 if I took the body home with me. I'm like, I said, for $19, you can keep it. So they had it cremated. I did not request the ashes.
You just throw it out the car window on the drive home.
If the pig had died, I would have just put it in a plastic bag and thrown it in my garbage, and nobody would have been the wiser.
You could have just put it in a plastic bag and it would have died eventually.
No, but I couldn't do that. And that's the thing. When it all comes down to it, much like Ray, I'm not a killer. I can't just do that. Mm-hmm. Somebody at work said, can you just flush it? I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's not a hamster. It's not a mouse. It's a guinea pig. Like, this, yeah, this is the size of a child's leg, so there's no way. So, yeah, and even the people at the vet were like, eh, you know, and they charged me for an office visit and everything. That's why it was expensive, even though I never saw the vet, because like, the vet doesn't want to do anything with a pig anyway. And they said, well, it was just old age. I'm like, no, this pig is really amazingly ill right now, so... we don't want it to suffer. So he's like, okay. Like, really, look at the pig. Look, take one look at this pig's face. Like, because we asked Journey if he wanted to say goodbye.
Look it in the eyes.
You couldn't. Just look at the tumor. So we asked Journey if she wanted to say goodbye to it. And, you know, Journey is like, man, not super attached to them anyway. I mean, likes the idea, but I think she was just trying to figure out how she was supposed to feel. She was obviously upset because Kelly was upset. But she immediately, I handed her the pig and she's like, ooh, just on the face. Because really it had this like huge cheek like out of here, like almost half the size of her head. So she's like, ooh, and then she's like, goodbye, cutie. And it's all very sad. So yeah, but yeah, I don't want to also have the dreams of the silence of the pigs because I could just hear the pig squealing as I tried to burn my hands trying to get the plastic bag up to the exhaust pipe of the car. Anyway, that was what my weekend was like. How about you guys?
Well, Jason had to squeegee his windshield.
Yeah, what's that all about?
No, that was a poor reference joke at a child flying through a windshield.
Oh! No! Not okay.
Because you saw the child mannequin, like, flying through the air.
It was so ridiculous.
Like a tracking shot of the child.
And I hadn't, remembered that part of the movie at all. So when I was watching it, I was like, I don't remember this. What's going to happen? And then I was like, oh, shit. And then it dawned on me. I'm like, oh, Drew's text message makes sense now.
Oh, yeah, completely.
So, sorry, Brother Drew. Have no fear. I think your windshields are probably stronger than that.
Have either of you seen the movie Junebug?
No.
Don't think so.
It's like one of Amy Adams' first movies. I'm gonna spoil it for you if you don't mind.
Okay.
But this is a movie.
The good thing is at my age at this point, I won't remember.
That's good. I think it's a really good movie. But in the movie, Amy Adams plays kind of this very southern, kind of very simple young woman who's pregnant, like way pregnant. And like the big city relative is coming back to visit. It's unimportant about what the actual plot is of the movie. But it was a really good movie. I think Amy Adams was even nominated for an Oscar for it.
Wow. Something like Miss and Mr. Chicopee?
No, not quite that bad. But it was a really affecting movie, and it was fresh in my mind when one of my coworkers at the time stopped by, asked me, and we were just chatting, and she asked if I'd seen any good movies lately. And I told her, oh, I saw this movie, Junebug. You should check it out. It's really good. It has some really good performances in it. And she's great. She's great. And I did not, this is a long time ago, probably 15 years ago.
So before kids.
But before I had kids, she was pregnant, my coworker, very pregnant. And I saw her the next week and asked her if she'd watched Junebug. She said, yeah. You might not want to recommend a movie that hinges on a late-term miscarriage to a pregnant lady. I was like, oh, yeah. That's a good point. Real good point.
Sorry.
Well, that's, you know, when we saw Up, it was after, a friend of mine miscarried. And there was no way to prepare me for Up. You guys have seen Up, right?
Nope.
You've seen Up, Drew?
Yeah, my wife and I watched Up during a period in our lives where we were having trouble conceiving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we did too. And so the movie it's an animated movie, right? And it's mm-hmm. got like freaking animated like Lou Grant who looks a little like Spencer Tracy the animation, but I think it's Ed Asner? I don't know.
Yeah, it but is. It is the most devastating cold open I've ever seen.
Yeah, the basically the movie is he has this little house and the town grows up around him and they're going to condemn him or whatever. So he attaches a bunch of balloons to his house and he's going to fly away and he has a fat little Boy Scout who shows up on his door and they end up flying away and having an adventure and it's great. It does not prepare you for the fact that you're going to have like a 10-minute love story in the beginning of this movie that is almost done only with pictures with no like spoken words.
Yeah, there's no dialogue.
Shows this couple and how they're young and they're in love and blah 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 blah, and then it shows she miscarries and they have a picture of like a cartoon animated like a pregnant lady anatomical chart, and the doctor like points to it and is like, no, you're barren. And she's crying, and so they can't have babies, and of course, she is dead before the movie starts. And I'm, like, gutted. Like, this is not how you start an animated movie.
There's so much in that cold open. There's the fact that she miscarries. They can't have children. They fell in love over their shared sense of adventure. So it shows them saving up money to go on this huge adventure and then having to use that funds for medical bills. And so they're left childless, barren, destitute, and then she dies and he's all alone.
Yeah, and then you got the fat Boy Scout that shows up and a dog that says squirrel. That's all. It's like, what? So, yeah. So this is kind of like that opening. Not quite. Actually, the opening was even actually more horrifying than the car crash in this movie. Also, I have a problem. Back to Dead Calm. I have a problem. I have a problem with Incy Wincy. Like,
yes.
I don't care if your toilet like flushes the wrong direction. I guess that's a myth. I don't care if that's not a knife. This is a knife. It's never Incy Wincy Spider. It's Incy Wincy. Always Incy, always Wincy.
Are you really going to take issue with pronunciations?
Itsy Bitsy, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. It's Itsy Bitsy. Right. Where was I? Incy Wincy? No, it's Itsy Bitsy.
you've already been corrupted.
I've already fucked it all up, yeah. It's Itsy Bitsy Spider, yes.
Why gang?
I'm still going to be mad about it, though. Never Incy Wincy.
And she ended it with, and Wincy goes up the spout again. No. No wonder that kid committed suicide.
Yeah.
Jesus. That was dark. Wow. Okay.
So, housekeeping on your guys' end? I mean, we can talk about news, because there's news to talk about if you want.
I don't have any pertinent housekeeping, I don't believe.
Drew?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Can we talk about the NBA in China?
I don't know anything about the NBA in China, sir.
So. Okay, well, let me I'll paraphrase or give a synopsis of what I think is going on, and Drew, please correct me cuz I'm sure I'll get something wrong here. But so
why Gand?
Yeah, so the NBA has been making strides into the Chinese market, and so the Chinese, because the government controls everything, the Chinese government's all very interested, you know, because basketball's popular, blah, blah, blah. Yao Ming, Chinese guy, really good player, played for the Houston Rockets. He's the chairman or whatever of the Chinese Basketball Association, or Chinese Basketball Players Association, maybe. But here's what happened. The general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted something along the lines, I mean, very short. It was like, stand with freedom, stand with Hong Kong. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not much more than that. Instantly, he had to remove the tweet, make an apology, and that wasn't enough. They have actually, like, China has basically said, all these exhibition games we're going to play, boom, you're gone. Also, all Houston Rockets apparel and any kind of merchandise or mention of the team, gone. And in the last couple days, I think all of the team sponsorships from China ended. So the NBA stands to lose billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because they offended the totalitarian regime of China.
Yep.
Which offends me as an American.
Yeah, they're in a really precarious position of kowtowing to this communist government with a real poor history of human rights.
Yes.
Or standing by the right of one of their employees to just make a statement.
Yes. Not even a controversial statement. Now, since then, there's been some jerks. A couple people went to an NBA game in Detroit or something and got kicked out. They say they got kicked out for wearing like free Hong Kong shirts, but they also were like yelling stuff and had big signs saying like, China go away or something. It may have been an exhibition game against a Chinese team. So, you kind of get it. I mean, you know. But still.
Well, that's but that's not the only major thing that, that has had fallout from something like that. I don't know if you know about what's going on with Blizzard Software.
Yes. Yes. You heard about that, Drew? Nope. Jason, tell that story.
So Blizzard Software is the parent company of such things as World of Warcraft. They also have the StarCraft? StarCraft franchise, the Diablo franchise, and Hearthstone, which is a pretty large online realm player game.
A competitive esport game, by the way.
Yes. And there was a huge international contest culminating in the winner takes prize of $500,000 and a title that was going on. And in China, I assume that's where it was. I don't know exactly. But the winner said something very similar when he was being interviewed, that he made some comments.
Well, there was a little bit more to it, but yeah, go ahead.
But basically, he did similar. Yeah. And Blizzard, at the pressure, I'm sure, of the Chinese government, also because the Chinese market is their most lucrative for software sales, stripped him of his prize, banned him from playing for a year.
Yeah, took away his way to get into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, well, what he did was while playing, you know, like Twitch or whatever, while playing, he put on a gas mask and yelled out one of the slogans that the Chinese protesters in Hong Kong are using. Basically, like free Hong Kong or something.
Yeah.
Still, well, yeah, it's a little more provocative, but still, yeah. I mean, yeah, you forget that freedom of speech is it's only as good as the country that says it's okay.
Yeah. Well, and so people are canceling their Blizzard accounts because it's all pay. You know, if you're playing Hearthstone or you're playing World of Warcraft, you're on a pay service. You're paying a monthly or annual fee to play the game, because there's always updates.
And they're a Chinese company. I think Tencent is a Chinese company that owns part of Blizzard, but not, they don't own the entire Blizzard. So Blizzard's getting screwed in this whole thing too.
Activision owns Blizzard.
You're right.
So
yeah.
So yeah, there's going to be some problems for Blizzard, because this is going to be hopefully the revenue that they will keep in China will offset the losses they're going to get elsewhere. But I have a Blizzard account. I'm tempted to just cancel it.
There's no reason why China can just shut it off too.
Yeah.
Like, cause, and again, Apple actually had another thing with China.
Yes.
Apple had an app that was meant, basically it was like a tracking software, but it was specifically designed to track the movement of the Hong Kong police, which I could see where that would be a problem, like for a law enforcement thing. So when China's like, not cool, Apple, boom, it disappeared off the app store. Toot sweet.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, a couple weeks after the president called and wished China a happy 70th Communist Party anniversary. And, you know, again, nobody in America is going to jail for saying free Hong Kong or whatever, or free Tibet. I mean, if I'm sure if they started talking about like Tibet or Taiwan or all these other things, that would be causing a problem too. Just means you can't have your $1 billion. And because they are a huge economic force, maybe the newest or the new main economic force in the world. Thoughts, hopes, dreams?
Nah, I'm just waiting for the whole world to finish catching on fire.
By the way, I didn't know how much individual endorsements came from China. Like Steph Curry and a bunch of the major players, they spend their summers in China promoting Under Armour or whatever the other their sponsorships are. So, yeah. If LeBron James goes over and represents Nike in China, he can't say anything about Hong Kong.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out as the season starts to get underway.
Yeah, because we're gonna have like you know, NFL got their panties in a bunch, or people got their panties in a bunch when the NFL player kneeled or knelt.
Knelt.
Yeah. So, I mean, all it would take, I mean, you know, if I was a player, I mean, these are millionaires, right? millionaires being paid by billionaires. Like, you know what? I'll wear a free Hong Kong shirt. What are you going to do, right? Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, the LA Clippers almost didn't play in a playoff game because of their owner. It came real close.
Oh, Stephen Kerr? Steve Kerr?
No. Donald Sterling was the owner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Doc Rivers was the coach, but it was bad. It was bad times for the NBA. This is a weird thing. He was a known racist for a long time.
Yeah, like, yeah. Okay.
He had been convicted of like racial housing discrimination, and had to pay settlements and everything. But then some recordings of him talking to his very young girlfriend, who I think was also African American.
I think she was Asian, but I could be wrong.
She was not white. He made some disparaging remarks, specifically about Magic Johnson.
Ah.
And that, I guess, was a bridge too far. And they yanked his team from him eventually because it was causing such a problem.
Yeah, because he said, I think you're right. I think the tape said something like where he was telling her, I don't want you hanging around the black people. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, Steve Kerr wore he went on like a diatribe about gun violence last year, maybe year before,
mm-hmm.
And so they're sort of scrambling to say that it was okay what he said when he said his political belief because is immediately important to American society, but it's not okay that the general manager of the Rocket says what he wants because I could piss off the people who are going to be paying us lots of money.
Steve Kerr says stuff all the time. I mean, anytime he's asked about something, he will readily share his thoughts about our current president.
Good for him.
And they are generally not positive.
By the way, Mark Cuban, also mum on China.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, he knows where his bread is buttered.
Mm-hmm. I think all the owners are. Has there been a single owner that said anything?
Nope.
Except, I'm sorry.
Yep. I'm not sure what the how to say I'm sorry in Chinese is, or Mandarin, but be learning it real fast. So between that and neither of you have seen Swimming to Cambodia, right?
No.
Nope.
Okay. I really highly recommend it because it does teach you a history lesson. All I can think of when I hear about this, the Kurds in Syria and Turkey, is like what we did to the Cambodians. And the Vietnamese, actually, where we made promises that we would defend them until we decided we weren't going to anymore. And we just said, bye-bye now.
April 12th, 1975, was the actual evacuation of Phnom Penh. Lon Nol had long since fled to Hawaii. 2 million people in the city now, instead of 600,000. Khmer Rouge rockets coming in at random and landing on hospitals, kids in the streets, schools, whatever. American Ambassador John Gunther Dean says, we have 2.5 hours, all Cambodian officials and Americans, 2.5 hours to evacuate the country. The Cambodians say, 2.5 hours? 2.5 hours? We're ruined. How are we going to convince the Russians in 2.5 hours that we're socialists? So this leaves behind the Cambodian officials, Long Beret, Lan Nan, and Prince Sirik Matak. Lon Nol had two brothers, Lan Nan and Lan Nil. Long Beret, Lan Nan, and Prince Sirik Matak decide to stay behind. Prince Sirik Matak sends a letter to the American ambassador telling him that they've decided not to go out with the evacuation. It reads, Dear Excellency and Friend, I thank you very sincerely for your letter and for your offer to transport me toward freedom. I cannot, alas, leave in such a cowardly fashion. As for you, and in particular for your great country, I never believed for a moment that you would have the sentiment of abandoning a people which has chosen liberty. You have refused us your protection, and we can do nothing about it. You leave, and it is my wish that you and your country will find happiness under the sky. But mark it well, that if I shall die here on the spot and in the country that I love, it is too bad because we are all born and must one day die. I have only committed this mistake of believing in you, the Americans. Please accept, Excellency, my dear friend, my faithful and friendly sentiments, Sirik Matak. And 5 days later, all three of their livers were carried through the streets on sticks.
It's not a good look. And, you know, the Turks, God bless them, they already have a recent, fairly recent in history at least, genocide named after them. By the way, you're not supposed to talk about the Armenian genocide, or the Turks get a little upset. But as comedian Jackie Cation, noted Armenian, has mentioned, don't commit genocide and then take photos of it. Because, you know, then there's proof. You can't just deny it. So, yeah, so nothing's going to happen there.
I can't. I don't know when the adults in the room are going to actually be responsible.
There are no adults in the room.
Yeah, you think?
They're all cowards.
Yep. We'll see. The news is interesting every day as things trickle out.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.